Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's March 14th, 1885, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
Though Gilbert and Sullivan are remembered today as cultural pillars of the Victorian age, they had rarely been under greater pressure than they were today in history in 1885. Their previous collaboration, Princess Ida, had been a massive flop, and so when the dress rehearsals for their new show, The Mikado, didn't go well, the pair were pretty nervous that its opening night, which is what we're recalling today, was about to go a bit titty-poos up.
But they needn't have worried, because William Gilbert, the lyricist, and Arthur Sullivan, the composer, as you say, had this glittering Victorian career. But this was by far, as it turned out, the most popular of their operettas. The Mikado, right from the first performance, was their biggest hit. 7 encores, 672 performances, and a lingering contribution to culture. Lyrics from the Mikado include "A Short Sharp Shock" and "Let the Punishment Fit the Crime," you know, still widely quoted things, even if you've never seen it or don't think you've seen the Mikado. And the songs include "A Wandering Minstrel Eye," "Three Little Maids," and "I've Got a Little List." Which is a weird coincidence, by the way, because we were talking about the copycat Zodiac last week. Yeah. That's one of the phrases the original Zodiac killer used in one of his letters, "I've Got a Little List." That's how much this permeated culture for 100 years.
And the success is even more remarkable given the somewhat tortured process of coming up with a theme for their next comic opera. They'd been working together for years at this point. They'd already staged 8 successful shows. And in fact, the Savoy Theatre had been built for them. The impresario Richard Doyley Cart had basically purpose-built a theatre for their show. So there was so much pressure, especially as you mentioned, Arian, Princess Ida hadn't been the success that was expected. It had actually closed after about half as many performances as their previous shows, which meant they had to get something new together quickly, much quicker than expected. They were contractually obliged to create something to stage in this theatre that had been built for them.
Although it's worth saying that was still 9 months.
Yeah.
You know, imagine having a 9-month run at the Savoy Theatre and that being considered a flop.
Yeah. I mean, it's all in context. But by this point, they were trying to come up with ideas. Sullivan in particular was pretty fed up of the Gilbert and Sullivan style that they had kind of boxed themselves into. It was all very light opera. He wanted to do something that was a bit more human and realistic, a bit more serious. So when Gilbert pitched him a plot that was like, okay, how about a magic lozenge that makes people fall in love? He was like, no, absolutely not that. So after a lot of back and forth, Gilbert's feelings were quite hurt by this, actually. He was like, what we're doing is great. What's the problem? But he came back to Sullivan. He pitched him a slightly different plot, something that would satisfy his craving for a bit more emotion and drama, which was the Mikado.
He did actually manage to get his magic lozenge into a future show, but it wasn't the whole thing that the show was about. And first up, of course, yes, they did the Mikado. Gilbert had to kind of come up with a new thing that would satisfy Sullivan's craving, as you say, for something a bit more hefty. And the story at least goes that he was sitting around in his Knightsbridge home and he caught sight of a Japanese executioner's sword that was hanging on the wall of his library. In later accounts, there's a sort of, you know, almost literal penny dropping moment of the sword falling off the wall and clattering to the floor and him going, aha, I must write about Japan. But at the very least, it tied into this era within the UK of just deep fascination with the Far East. And only a few months earlier, more than 250,000 people had flocked to this really groundbreaking Japanese exhibition in Knightsbridge, where, you know, this was at the moment where Japan was starting to open up to the international community. And this show had been staged kind of as a picture of the exotic East, and it absolutely captured everyone's attention. And among those people was Gilbert.
Which is hilarious if you've ever seen the Mikado, because it's not exactly an authentic depiction of even 1885 Japan. Gilbert and Sullivan had never been to Japan, but of course the audience hadn't been to Japan either. And as you say, they were just interested. It was a fad to find out more about Japan. And even though Gilbert and Sullivan knew they were writing an English comic operetta that was kind of about Japan, but not really. I mean, it's got more sea shanties in it than you would if you were doing a Japanese score authentically. They still tried their best to incorporate what had captured people from that Knightsbridge exhibition, including hiring some of the Japanese people that had staffed the exhibition to teach the cast how to walk, for example, so that it looked as authentic as possible.
Yeah, and the inauthenticity of it does stretch even to the title, the Mikado. It literally means honourable gate. And at the time, it was a common way in English sources to refer to the Emperor of Japan, although apparently it was never actually used that way in Japan itself. So, I mean, even in the title, you've got the fact that this is very much Japan through a Western lens.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, that actually what they were trying to write wasn't really about Japan at all. They were very much, as ever, with W.S. Gilbert librettos, he's talking about England itself. He's not talking about the place that he's set the thing. And this was that. He was trying to do a broad satire about the ills of the death penalty, and the plot revolves around the fact that the Mikado, the Emperor of Japan, has just made flirting illegal and punishable by having your head cut off. And, you know, sort of japes proceed from there. But, you know, this wasn't about Japan. It was about England. And so the layering of Japanese cultural artifacts, including the Miyasama chorus, which features directly in the show, which actually was a marching song of the Japanese emperor in Japan, you know, that stuff is sort of by the by. It lends to it an air of authenticity, as long as you don't scratch the surface or know too much about Japan yourself. And really, it is the vehicle for their satire and mockery of England itself.
But I think it's easy to think that the Victorians didn't know that, but they did.
Like, yes.
The Victorian, if you look at the reviews from the time, it's very clear that they're saying, wow, this is authentically Japan. I mean, they did believe that, but they also knew that this was a heightened art form. You go to, this was like the equivalent of going to watch a Marvel movie that happens to be set in Japan, right? So, like, you go to the Savoy Theatre, which, as you say, this purpose-built, astonishing place with electric lighting. Ooh, you know, stars from the stage, you know, turning up is a different role each time. You're going to watch something that feels transcendental, but then within that, you know, the very fact that they'd even tried to approximate Japanese cherry blossom on stage was in itself taken to be an incredible attention to detail. The review in the Times, for example, says, in the deceptive light of the stage, the English counterfeit at the Savoy is scarcely distinguishable from the genuine article at the Japanese village. For this reason alone, the student of comparative ethnology should pay a visit to both exhibitions, the other exhibition being the one in Knightsbridge of actual artifacts from Japan. So, I mean, you know, there was like a sense of, well, they've done really well to try and make it feel like Japan, and they've done a really good trick, but they still knew they were watching a comic opera.
Yeah,
and of course their impression of what a good interpretation of Japan was forged by other interpretations of Japan that they had seen. You know, very few Westerners had actually been to Japan or spent any significant amount of time around Japanese culture. So they're like, well, look, they've got everything. They've got swords, they've got cherry blossoms. As far as I'm concerned, they've ticked every box. You know, and I think it's significant that early Japanese visitors to the show were more amused than offended, as would grow to be the case in late years, presumably because the actual content of the show is completely divorced from Japan. Apart from that surface level aesthetic, there isn't really anything about Japan to the show. And I think it also speaks to why it is difficult to resolve the issues with staging it now, because, you know, there are some shows, you know, like Othello being an obvious example, where if it's recast appropriately, it can be told in a kind of an interesting manner that still says something to audiences today. But with the Mikado, casting Asian actors doesn't really solve the problem, because adding one piece of authenticity only exposes the inauthenticity of literally everything else about it.
I mean, the runaway success of this led to a couple of things that hadn't happened before. One was a falling out between Doyley Cart, who produced the shows, and Gilbert, who wanted more involvement in running the theatre. The other was, and it's funny, we talked about this with Jesus Christ Superstar in 1971. This was happening 100 years before that. The show was so popular that Americans were sending spies to the Savoy to copy down the score so that they could unauthorizedly perform it stateside.
That's amazing.
And it's amazing because it's literally the same as happened with Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
So Doily Cart had to take every Japanese costume in New York out of circulation so that when they finally brought a version over to Broadway, it was his version that Americans saw first.
How is that your solution? Like, it's like going, I'm just going to rip out the larynx of anyone who can sing.
Tomorrow.
He's the doctor who made medicine taste nice by putting sweetener on it.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts,
part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.